Hello and welcome to Expert Secrets to Diabetes Reversal Summit. I am so glad that you have chosen to join us on this important presentation that we're going to have today with my guest, Robbie Barbero. So happy to have you here, Robbie.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much. Thank you for all the work you're doing. We're going to have a lot of fun today.
Absolutely. In case you have not met Robbie before, Robbie has a master's in public health and is the co-founder of Mastering Diabetes and Amla Green. He's a co-author of the New York Times bestseller, Mastering Diabetes, the revolutionary method to reverse insulin resistance permanently in type 1, type 1.5, type 2, pre-diabetes and gestational diabetes. So I think he's got something for everybody today. I am so glad that he's here, and we'll be learning a little bit more about him as we go through our interview today. But Robbie, to start with, I'd like you to share with us a little bit about how you came to the place where you are now as a diabetes coach, educator, and international speaker on this topic of mastering diabetes. What got you started?
Yeah, so it all started when I was 12 years old, and I was complaining about going to the bathroom all the time, being thirsty all the time. And my mom at the time said, "Don't be silly. You don't have diabetes," because my older brother had type 1 diabetes. I had seen him go through these circumstances. And I said, "Mom, I think I have type 1 diabetes, just like Steve." She said, "No, don't be silly. You don't have diabetes." I said, "Okay, fine." So then she went out of town. We were living in Minnesota at the time. She traveled to Florida, where we eventually moved. She was there looking at homes with my dad. And I called, she called to check in. And she said, "How are things going?" I said, "Mom, I couldn't sleep last night. I was cramping." She said, "Okay, go upstairs, use your brother's blood glucose meter and test yourself." And sure enough, my blood glucose was well over 400. And that's a bad sign. It should never be above, I would say, 140 or so for somebody who's non-diabetic after a meal. It just was crazy high, big problem. Yes. And my brother said right then and there, he said, "You know what? You have type 1 diabetes, pack your bag. You're going to be in the hospital for a few nights." So we proceeded to go to the general doctor. They ran some tests. I'm not sure exactly which test they ran at the time, but then I remember the doctor coming into the room and he said, "Yeah, you have type 1 diabetes." And that was the first time I'd seen my older brother cry. He was like, "Oh, I'm just so sorry. You have to deal with this." And then we proceeded. We drove to the hospital and I stayed there. I only had to stay there for one night because my family was quite familiar with the condition. But I remember my parents coming back from Florida and my dad saying, "It's okay. This is just an inconvenience and you can still do whatever you want in life." And that was the attitude my parents really had, which is that, this is not going to stop, you or your brother from doing, whatever you want to achieve in life. So I proceeded to get standard medical care. So we lived in Minnesota, and Rochester, where the Mayo Clinic is located, was just a few hours away from where we were living in St. Cloud. And so my brother and I would both go there on a regular basis. And the Mayo Clinic is known as one of the best, if not the best, medical establishments in the world. And I had an entire team there. I had an endocrinologist. I had a nutritionist. I had a psychologist. And nowhere, at no point in these interactions, and we would go every 6 months. At no point in these interactions, did anybody talk to me about insulin resistance? Nobody talked to me about things I could do nutrition-wise, lifestyle habit-wise to reduce my risk of the long-term complications that are associated with type 1 diabetes. None of this came up. So it was all on my own journey where I learned about this. And for me, it started when my dad was selling supplements. He was sort of on the side. He was selling some Herbalife. He got involved with some other network marketing companies. And, part of the pitch was that, hey, our soils are compromised. It's probably a good idea to take these multivitamins to get some extra nutrients. And that was just the beginning of me thinking, okay, wait a minute. There's things that we can do outside of just general standard teachings that can impact our health. Absolutely. And that just led me on this mission. I started learning about all kinds of things, whether it was additives in food or chemicals and pesticides in food and all this stuff. And I ended up trying a lot of different approaches, learning a lot of different things. But there was one book in particular that ended up changing the course of my life. And I'm not recommending this book because this guy ended up going to jail. There was some fraud involved. But nonetheless, the book actually planted a seed in my mind and it changed my life. And the book was called Kevin Trudeau's Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. And you might remember this guy. Wow, he had infomercials all over the place. Very handsome man. The cover of the book was purple. And he was selling millions of copies. And for me, the book planted this seed that, you know what, maybe it's possible to reverse type 1 diabetes. Mm. Maybe if I make these lifestyle changes and I try and heal from the inside out, maybe I can regenerate my beta cells. And so that sent me on this mission. And I can't say that I have reported that I have solved this, that I can't say I reverse type 1 diabetes. And just so people know, the difference is type 1, that's the type I'm living with, my brother and millions of other Americans or people around the world. Mm-hmm. And that's where our pancreas is not producing enough insulin. Okay. So my pancreas has been damaged. The beta cells inside the pancreas are no longer secreting sufficient quantities of insulin. In my case, it's secreting an undetectable amount of insulin. Okay. So I've run some tests and we can determine, okay, how well is your pancreas functioning? And mine is essentially producing zero. Mm-hmm. And so that's type 1 diabetes. Now, mm-hmm. type 2 and pre-diabetes, these are the much more common. About 90 to 95% of people all over the world have one of these types of diabetes. And that's actually characterized by initially producing excess quantities of insulin. Mm-hmm. So it's not that your pancreas is being damaged. It's not that there's any sort of autoimmune activity going on, anything like that. It's a lifestyle condition that is brought on by lifestyle choices where your pancreas produce more and more and more insulin to overcome poor lifestyle choices. That's what's happening.
And so, it kind of just, I just want to clarify for people what happens is it kind of wears out after a while. And then
so yes,
can get to where it can't produce enough insulin to maintain blood sugars. And you can actually turn into kind of a type 1 diabetic if you let that run long enough. Is that correct?
You're exactly right. That is a huge distinction. One that we were very careful to make in our book, and we make it across all of our work here at Mastering Diabetes. But you're exactly right. If this lifestyle condition is allowed to progress and you don't take it seriously, over time, the pancreas gets so exhausted that it can't produce enough insulin anymore. And it serves as sort of like the self-destruction to a certain extent that happens. And you have limited and limited insulin production. And in some cases, even with that limited insulin production, you could still become insulin sensitive enough to completely get off diabetes medications and reverse it. So again, if caught early enough and if followed, you know, lifestyles followed diligently enough, pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes can absolutely be reversed for sure.
Yes.
But, and we knew this, we know this is, this research is dated back, you know, back to, you know, I would say the 1930s or so. We knew that people could completely turn this around. Mm-hmm. But type 1 diabetes, to this day, we don't have a solution for completely reversing. So this idea that I was going to do this, that this book planted the seed in my mind and set me on this journey, is still crazy. Like it's still like, that's ludicrous. Like we can't do that. There's no way, there's no science behind that. Like it's just not going to happen. So that's like the current understanding around the topic. But nonetheless, I'm like, look, somebody has to be first. Like in all of science, if you look at history, somebody had to do this first. And an example I think of is Roger Bannister. He was the first person to run a 4-minute mile. And prior to that, all the smartest people in the world, the researchers, the athletic directors, whoever, they said that's not possible. And then once he did it, other people have proceeded to do it. There's many people who've run a 4-minute mile now. So I do believe we're going to figure this out at some point. We're going to naturally find a way for people with type 1 diabetes to regain their health without the need to inject exogenous insulin. We're not there yet, but we still have what I learned along that journey is what has, you know, we've come to present as Mastering Diabetes and to help people with all types of diabetes. So as a person living with type 1, I and all the other type 1s, all my other fellow insulin dependent people living with diabetes, we are incredible test subjects for insulin sensitivity. We have instant feedback, instant data, which tells us, are certain lifestyle choices making us more insulin sensitive or more insulin resistant. And the reason we have that data is because number one, we inject insulin. So we know we can quantify how much insulin is being used at any point of the day. We measure our blood glucose consistently, whether it's through a continuous glucose monitor or pricking ourselves. And we count our carbohydrates. Like we count our food in order to know how much insulin to inject. So these three pieces of data is what's required to tell somebody, are you more insulin sensitive or less insulin sensitive? Whereas many other people, you know, vast majority of the population, they could measure their blood glucose, they could measure their food, but they don't know on a moment by moment basis, how much insulin is their pancreas secreting? Mm. We still don't have that test. And that's going to be a brilliant invention and a brilliant discovery when the researchers do find a way to, you know, test insulin as easily as we test blood glucose. We don't have it yet. So nonetheless, long story short here, all right, I start changing my lifestyle. I start making new decisions to do everything I can to heal from the inside out. And I learn a lot and I try a lot of different things. I try the Weston A. Price Foundation diet. I end up trying a Gabriel Cousins plant-based ketogenic diet where I'm getting my calories from nuts and seeds and oil and having lots of greens, lots of celery, but having to avoid carbohydrate-rich foods. Even bell peppers have to be limited because those have too many carbohydrates. You have to limit carrots to be careful because you're going to get too many carbohydrates. Obviously, things like fruit on the phase one aspect of this program were completely out. I couldn't have fruit. So I started experimenting with this. And at that point, I'm a freshman at the University of Florida. And I'm doing this. And what happens is, because I stop eating carbohydrates, my total insulin need kept on dropping. It was going down and down and down. I was like, wow, I was getting really excited. I think this is working. I'm just got to keep going. And eventually I won't need any insulin anymore. This is exciting. And in hindsight, what I learned is that I was actually eating myself into a state of insulin resistance.
Yeah.
That just because I was taking a smaller amount of insulin doesn't mean I was becoming more insulin sensitive. And as a student, not only did I realize that in hindsight, but I was struggling with low energy. There were points when I was on campus and I essentially blacked out. It was a very scary time. I had put in all this effort, feel like things are working, and then I'm just not functioning well. I lost more weight than I should have lost. And I was scared, like I was lost. So at this point, I go back to a naturopath that I've worked with. And she's like, okay, you know what? Maybe what you need to do now is you should do some chelation therapy. Like, well, maybe I think it's like some heavy metal stuff. Like, we got to get that out. I'm like, okay, well, this sounds good. Like, I'm willing to try anything.
Yeah.
And I considered doing it. So I had to drive to Tampa, which is several hours away from Gainesville, where the University of Florida is located. And I was like, oh man, I have to drive regularly to do this chelation therapy. Like, I don't know. But before I committed to that, I heard a podcast. You know, it's kind of funny to like doing a presentation like this, and this hopefully plants a seed and changes somebody's life. But I heard a podcast with this guy, his name is Doug Graham. And he was saying how you could eat a really healthy fruit-based diet, and that can help you eliminate heavy metals and other toxins from your body. And I was like, wow, well, I've been avoiding fruit. I love fruit. Like, I miss fruit. And this guy's saying I can get the same result that I'm looking to get from this chelation therapy. It's going to be cost me a lot less money. Like, this sounds exciting. I'm going to go down this path. And that was September of 2006. So it's been over 15 years now that I've been on this path and doing this. And that is when I started this journey of a new approach, okay, of increasing my carbohydrate from whole foods. And then it was in December of 2006 that I started working with Doug Graham as a coach. And I mean, obviously at Mastering Diabetes, that's our primary focus. We do coaching and we're sort of like paying it forward because that's what changed my life. That's what changed Cyrus's life. Mm-hmm. And I started working with this guy, Doug Graham. And for the first week, I ate nothing but bananas, literally nothing but bananas.
Then that sounds like a death sentence for most diabetic, right?
That's what people think, okay?
Yes.
And then the second week, I ate bananas and lettuce. And then I slowly started to add more and more fruits. And I eventually was living on this fruit-based diet, lots of fruits and lots of greens. And what happened was extraordinary. My insulin requirements for the carbohydrate that I was consuming improved by 900%. My wow. insulin sensitivity changed by 900% from a plant-based ketogenic diet to a low-fat plant-based whole food diet centered on fruit. And so this was eye-opening. And what it led me to do was go back and look at research and then in the peer-reviewed journals and find out that, oh, wow, actually this idea of doing a low-fat diet, high in whole carbohydrates, demonstrating an improvement in insulin sensitivity goes back to 1926. Wow. Okay. And we have known this, but it's not been aware. People are not made aware of this. So I dig into the research and the realization that I come to is truly life-changing, which is that what I experience in my body on a day-by-day basis, a meal-by-meal basis for now over 15 years is literally the solution to pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes for the vast majority of people being able to get off medication. So the name of the game is to reverse insulin resistance.
Yeah.
And I experience that every day in my body.
Oh, I love that, Robbie. I'd like you to explain to our listeners a little bit about insulin resistance so they can understand what we're talking about and like how that works in the body.
Okay. So
don't forget the rest of your story either. So.
Well, no, I mean, that's the gist of the story. So okay. Basically, I mean, now, as a person living with, type 1 diabetes, I have an A1C currently right now, it's 5.3%. I eat well over 700 grams of carbohydrate per day. I inject a physiologically normal amount of insulin. So roughly 30 units per day. And when you're living with any form of insulin dependent diabetes, that's your goal. Your goal is to inject what your pancreas would have normally secreted when it was healthy and normal. Okay. Right. This idea of lowering and lowering and lowering insulin and trying to get to a point where you have like zero insulin is illogical. Insulin is a necessary required hormone. It's not about less and less and less and less and less. It's about a physiologically normal amount, which allows you to eat healthy diets that are going to nourish your health short-term and long-term. Right. So I inject a physiological normal amount of insulin. I wear a continuous glucose monitor. So I have a Dexcom G6 and this gives me data. Every 5 minutes, I get a new reading on my blood glucose meter and it allows me to assess my time in range. Right. And this is actually the future of assessing somebody's diabetes health. This number will become more important than the A1C number because it gives a complete picture. Mm. You could have a really good A1C by having a lot of high blood glucose readings and a lot of low readings that then average out to a healthy A1C. So it doesn't give the full picture. Whereas time in range, it does give you the full picture. You can't hide any truths, okay? So my time in range is consistently above 90%. And that is extraordinary where most people living with type 1 diabetes are in the 60%, 70% range. Mm. So I'm doing the exact opposite of what people think you should do, which is eat a lot of carbohydrates. And I'm showing that all my numbers across the board are showing excellent diabetes control. And it's not just me, it's many, many of our clients. So that's the gist of my story. And now, of course, what we do here at Mastering Diabetes, it's beyond my story, it's beyond Cyrus's story. We went and took our experience and said, wow, like, are we anomalies or is this like, is this science? And fortunately for everybody out there, it is science. It's all predictable. It's all been documented again since the 1920s. And whether you're looking at research, whether it's epidemiological research, whether it's mechanisms, it doesn't matter. The picture is still the same. Low-fat, plant-based, whole food diets will help you reverse insulin resistance. So let's understand what is insulin resistance. So the dictionary definition, it's the diminished ability of cells to respond to the action of insulin in transporting glucose from the bloodstream into muscle and other tissues. So what does this mean? It means that when you're living with insulin resistance, your body is struggling to take glucose from your bloodstream into your cells. It's insulin's primary function to open up the door. That's what insulin does. It opens up the door so glucose can slide into the cells gracefully and you have the glucose you need to power your cells and to live a happy, healthy, active life. Insulin, it's a spectrum, okay? It's not like a on-off, okay? There are certain levels of insulin sensitivity or insulin resistance, however you want to look at it. And so we live in a world right now where the vast majority of people are insulin resistant and they just don't even know it. because right. insulin resistance occurs before pre-diabetes. Mm-hmm. And then pre-diabetes leads to type 2 diabetes if you don't reverse that insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. Now, the CDC has already established there are over 85 million people living with pre-diabetes, but they don't know it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then that means there is a whole host of many, many more millions mm-hmm. who are living with insulin resistance and don't know it. It hasn't even gotten to pre-diabetes yet. Mm-hmm. Okay. They haven't gotten to that point where their A1C is in that range. Mm-hmm. So once your A1C hits 5.7%, you are now living with pre-diabetes mm-hmm. all the way through to 6.4%. That's the pre-diabetes range. Once you hit 6.5, you're now in the type 2 diabetes range. Mm-hmm. So the goal here is we want people to catch this early, to reverse insulin resistance, to get an A1C yes. of 5.6% or below, and not need any diabetes medications. That's what we want to happen.
Yes, so, absolutely.
So we understand that the definition now, but let's figure out, okay, what causes insulin resistance? Mm-hmm. And before I get there, I want to establish why this is so important. So insulin resistance is what we like to say here at Mastering Diabetes. It's the central node of a laundry list of conditions. Okay, so think in the center, mm-hmm. you see like a big circle, it says insulin resistance. And then around that, you see one arrow that points up to cancer, another arrow that points up to Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm. another one that points up to fatty liver disease. Okay, mm-hmm. then high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, mm-hmm. PCOS, okay, mm-hmm. neuropathy, retinopathy. The list goes on and on and on. Insulin resistance is at the center of all of these conditions. When you are living with insulin resistance, you have an increased risk of developing all of them.
Right.
It's universally accepted. There's really no disagreement about how many people are living with insulin resistance. So it's this is a big deal and that it's a big problem. Right. Where the disagreements come in is, okay, what are we going to do to reverse it? What's the cause of this? So,
yes.
And it's fun for us to talk about this because, again, number one, like I have this like every single day, every meal yes. personal experience, which then correlates with the research. So yeah. what we know based on over 100 years of evidence-based research is that insulin resistance is caused by the consumption of excess dietary fat. This is the primary cause. You consume too much fat in your diet. Too much fat comes in your mouth and it ends up getting stored in muscle and liver tissue in excessive quantities. Mm-hmm. So muscle and liver cells, they're supposed to have some fat in there. That's normal. That's great. Every cell is going to have a little bit of fat. But when you have too much, mm-hmm. that is when the excess dietary fat starts to impair the insulin functioning, the mechanisms. There's a lot of science, okay? A lot of stuff you don't need to know that's going on inside your cell in order to allow insulin to open the door. And so it's the excess dietary fat. Now, the biggest problem of trans fat, we all agree that's a problem, okay? Then you move into saturated fat, that's a problem. And also we have to understand and accept that too much plant fats as well, okay? Too much mm-hmm. polyunsaturated fats can lead to insulin resistance. They're certainly better and not as problematic mm-hmm. as saturated mm-hmm. fats, but it's still a problem. And one thing I love to do here is I want to share on my screen just for a moment here. Let's see here, share screen. Do you see my screen in full here?
Yes.
Okay. So I just want to share a little bit of the history. This is just a snippet of researchers who explored this topic in human beings in the world's top journals. This is the British Medical Journal here, Dr. Himsworth. And they did a lot of sophisticated experiments, but the conclusions of their papers are very telling. He says in 1934, it is evident that on the high-fat diet, insulin takes longer to act and then acts more slowly on the blood sugar than when the subject is given a high carbohydrate diet, okay? So here's another paper. This is in 1935, Dr. Himsworth says, it is demonstrated that the efficiency with which a standard dose of crystalline insulin acts on the blood sugar is determined by the carbohydrate content of the diet, so that the greater the amount of carbohydrate in the diet, the greater the sensitivity of the organism to insulin. Okay, wow. It continues. 1935, this is The Lancet. Again, one of the most respected peer-reviewed journals in the world. Dr. Inder Singh conducted a study and he concluded, there is no indication that healthy people taking a diet high in carbohydrates are especially liable to diabetes. In fact, numerous observations show improvement of carbohydrate tolerance following its greater intake. Okay, 1971, Dr. Brunzel published a study. He basically fed people sugar water compared to a standard diet and wanted to see what happened to their insulin sensitivity. And he says, this data suggests that the high carbohydrate diet increased the sensitivity of peripheral tissues to insulin. Okay, so there's a lot of research we could talk about, but I just want to paint a quick picture of a snippet of research that we have known for a long time that when you increase carbohydrate content while simultaneously reducing fat content, insulin works more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And I get to experience this every single day. Like it's so repeatable. It's just as confident as we know objects fall at 9.8 meters per second. Like we know that when you increase your fat intake, your ability to absorb, to uptake glucose gets impaired. And so what we teach people to do is how to adjust their lifestyle in a way where they begin to melt away that excess fat that's stored in muscle and liver tissue and become more insulin sensitive through a list of lifestyle changes, mm-hmm. primarily dietary changes.
That is so, so amazing, Robbie. And I think that gives so much hope to people that are struggling with advanced type 2 diabetes. Maybe they're taking insulin already, or they're type 1s. You know, we don't hear enough about this aspect of insulin sensitivity. And I'm so, so appreciative of the work that you and Cyrus have done in this area. I know that it was a real eye-opener to me when I first read Mastering Diabetes, the book. And I just love how science-based it is, how you have the research pulled together that shows definitively that this whole food, carbohydrate-rich, plant-based diet is such an important key to blood sugar control across the board and for insulin sensitivity for everyone, no matter whether they have a diagnosis of anything or not. And it is a root cause of so many of our other chronic lifestyle diseases. This is just a real key point. And I think that for all of you listening, this is one of the most important secrets that you can take away with you today, is that there's hope for increasing insulin sensitivity. And why is this important, Robbie? Like, if we don't increase insulin sensitivity and we're already a type 1 diabetic, so we're having to take insulin, what difference does it make long-term for us?
I'm glad you asked that question. So the difference it makes is, number one, I'll talk about type 1 diabetes, insulin dependent for sure, but really applies to everybody. So, okay. But in this case, type 1 insulin dependent, any type of insulin dependent diabetes.
Yeah.
When you are insulin resistant, it is more challenging to control your blood glucose on a day-by-day basis. It is more erratic. Your predictability of how to know how much insulin to inject and how your body's going to respond becomes much more challenging. The whole process becomes challenging. In addition, when you're living with insulin resistance, you oftentimes have brain fog, low energy, and this is going to impact your ability to move your body consistently. And so consistent movement is huge for overall health, for mental health, and for improved insulin sensitivity. So it's kind of like this. One thing impacts the other thing, which impacts the other thing, and you have this domino effect of unfortunate, you know, effects. So people living with type 1 diabetes also struggle with their weight. And so that is, again, a root cause here, insulin resistance being a core problem. Mm-hmm. And then we have the long-term consequences. So people living with any form of diabetes, we don't die because we have high blood glucose readings. We don't die because our A1C is high. We die of the complications of diabetes, number one being heart disease. Mm-hmm. So if you can follow a lifestyle that improves your insulin sensitivity and reduces your risk of heart disease, you're automatically addressing, you know, the number one complication of your condition right then and there. Mm. So the long-term consequences, the improvement of your kidney function, by improving your insulin sensitivity is essential. Like, again, chronic kidney disease, big issue with people living with all types of diabetes. Same thing when it comes to fatty liver disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high triglycerides. All these things can be addressed by focusing on insulin sensitivity, and you can really turn it around very quickly.
I think one thing you said I'd like us to talk just a little bit more about is that choice of foods for increasing insulin sensitivity. We've used the term whole foods, plant-based. We've talked about 700 grams of carbs a day. Let's talk a little bit about where those come from and what it might look like on your plate, proportions, that sort of thing. If people are really wanting to try to start moving in this direction, what should they be thinking about?
Okay. This is very important because the devil is in the details in this situation, okay? And I want to be very clear. And one thing we have received a lot of very positive feedback about is how our book is very clear. Like, there is a plan to follow. There's no ambiguity. You know exactly what to do. The book actually has also like a meal plan. Mm-hmm. And we have a very clear list, which I'm going to go over the bullet points of our list, but inside the book has literally a list of every single green light food that we recommend. So first and foremost, when transitioning, we have to understand that slow and steady wins the race. Mm-hmm. So I'm not expecting that people hear this interview and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, let's go. And all of a sudden overnight, boom, they've completely become a low-fat plant-based whole food eater and they've just figured everything out. That's not realistic. So our program is all about slow, steady, step-by-step, make one change at a time. So we start with changing breakfast, just to be clear. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to help paint the picture of like where you're headed. Mm-hmm. Where's the goal of, okay, once you get to a place, okay, once you know, okay, I'm now following the Mastering Diabetes method. I'm doing it properly and I'm going to do this consistently. What does that look like? Mm-hmm. Well, number one, to truly follow a low-fat diet, we're suggesting you should not consume more than 30 grams of total fat per day. And most people are consuming way more than that, 70, 80, 100 grams of fat per day, oftentimes more. Mm-hmm. And most people don't even know what does it look like to actually consume a diet that's less than 30 grams of fat. They just don't know. So it's a learning process. And we have a whole chart in our book, which I wish I had in front of me, but where we illustrate how much fat is in a small amount of common foods, you know, so like a third of an avocado or like just a handful of nuts or like a little bit of oil. Like, it's a little bit goes a long way with these high fat foods, and same things with animal products and other processed foods that include oil. So the point is no more than 30 grams of total fat per day. Now, how do you do this? First off, you focus on green light food. We've created a traffic light system, green light, yellow light, red light, makes it easy to follow. Green light foods are foods that we suggest you eat in unlimited quantities. It is very, very difficult to overeat on green light foods. It's possible, but very difficult. And the reason is because green light foods are characterized by being high in water content, high in fiber, and completely unprocessed. There's no processing in these foods. So the first category is fruits. That's going to be papaya, bananas, mangoes, peaches, pears, you name it, whole fruits, unrefined. Then the next category would be starchy vegetables. That's potatoes, yams, butternut squash, okay? Acorn squash, kabocha squash, lots of great squashes in that category. Yeah. The third category is going to be beans, legumes, and we also have peas in there, okay? So these foods are very, very nutritious. And they're, again, full of water, full of fiber. Eat them as much as you want. Again, very hard to overeat on them. Fourth category, intact whole grains. Intact being the key word. So yes, we're going to have quinoa. We're going to have brown rice in here. We're going to have farro, millet, unprocessed. Those are the first four categories. Then we have leafy greens. So that's going to be lettuce. That's going to be arugula, spinach. Okay. All your leafy greens. Then we go into non-starchy vegetables. That's going to be things like bell peppers. You could put carrots in that category, cucumbers, zucchini. All right. Then we move into herbs and spices and mushrooms. So these are all foods that we recommend you just use as much as you see fit. And I want to emphasize those first four categories are listed in a particular order, and they're listed first because in order to succeed on this program, you have to learn how to eat calorie-dense green light foods. Mm. If you just eat a lot of lettuce, a lot of cucumbers, a lot of bell peppers, it's not going to work. You will become hungry and you will say, oh, this diet doesn't have enough protein. I have to go eat a cheeseburger. Then you can eat a cheeseburger and you're going to feel better because you got calories. So you have to learn how to not fear the carbohydrate-rich foods, which I know is a big deal for people living with diabetes. And they're very scared. Like, look, if I eat a potato, I'm going to test myself. My meter is going to say I'm 300. So you got to overcome that through education and knowledge and understanding what to do. So you got green light foods. When you eat these foods, they all have fat in them. Mm-hmm. They all whole foods have not just fat, all whole foods have essential fatty acids. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're getting your fat. And these foods are not, you could eat them in these unlimited quantities. You will not exceed 30 grams of fat by just focusing on green light foods. Okay. So that's, I'm trying to sort mm-hmm. of like help paint the picture yeah. of like what you're going to do in order to keep this fat intake low. Now, the yellow light category, these are foods that are, they're known to be healthy. Research has acknowledged that. We know this. But they're either a little bit high in fat or they're a little bit more processed. And so what we're suggesting in this category is that you just be cognizant of how much you're consuming. By no means are we saying these are bad foods. By no means are we saying never have them. We're just saying the distinction between green and yellow is you got to be much more careful about how much you're consuming, particularly to keep your fat intake low. So yellow light foods are nuts and seeds, avocado, coconut meat, olives. There's a specific fruit called durian, which is a high fat fruit. Okay. And then we have some more processed foods. So like brown rice, pasta, things like Ezekiel mm-hmm. bread, good options, great foods, but it's still more ideal to simply eat whatever those foods were originally made of. So mm-hmm. eat brown rice instead of brown rice pasta. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we also throw fermented foods in the yellow light category because of the sodium content, not because there's anything wrong with fermented foods. It's just like, it's the sodium content that mm-hmm. if you went crazy and ate a ton, you would definitely consume excess sodium and that's not going to be good for your blood pressure. Right. So that's the yellow light category. Then the red light category, these are foods we suggest you either completely avoid or minimize. And this is going to be animal products. That's going to be, you know, chicken. We have fish. You have steak. Those are all in the red light category. Then we also include all oils. All oils are put in the red light category. It doesn't matter if it's extra virgin olive oil, coconut oil. Mm-hmm. We are teaching that it's better to consume the whole food. Mm-hmm. Have some olives. Don't need olive oil. Eat some coconut flakes and coconut meat on top of your smoothie bowl. That's great, but you don't need coconut oil. You don't need something that's been refined and is so high in fat. Same thing when it comes to processed foods, all the processed foods you can think of, Oreos, Twinkies, you know, we're going to put that stuff in the red light category, but we're also putting things like these new processed plant-based foods, whether it's a processed burger, whether it's a processed hot dog, whatever it is, this stuff is made in factories. This stuff is high in fat. This stuff is full of additives, preservatives, food coloring. It's a disaster. It's not great for your health. The green light category is the place to focus. These are whole natural foods, straight from nature, unprocessed, incredibly delicious. So you want to wow. eat the green light foods. That's how it works.
Oh, I love that, Robbie. You have given us so many great gold nuggets today that I know that we can take away something that we can start practicing today and can actually work on improving our insulin sensitivity. And I want to put in just a word of caution that we've done this on most of our presentations, and that is, if you decide to make these changes and you already are on medications for blood sugar, it is so important that you be monitoring your blood sugars closely and work with your healthcare provider, because the things we are talking about can drop your blood sugar like a rock. And we don't want anybody getting into an emergency situation of low blood sugar, which can absolutely happen if you're not monitoring yourself carefully. And that's why we suggest you work with your healthcare provider to adjust your medications, because you're going to need to drop those quickly if you actually start implementing the things that we're talking about in this whole series. So I just thank you so much, Robbie, for being with us here today. This has been amazing. And I'd love to have you back, because I know there's so many things we didn't have time to talk about today.
There's so much to talk about. And I would love to do that. And I appreciate your warning there, because it's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. You got to be in touch with your doctor. You got to be careful, because this stuff is powerful. This is food as medicine, and you will not need as many medications when you maximize your insulin sensitivity.
Absolutely. So thank you so much, Robbie. This has been a real blessing to have you here with us today. And I want to thank all of our listeners. Do not forget to check on this page with the video. You're going to find a link to a giveaway that Robbie has made available to us. And it is a real gem. Do you want to say just a couple words about that, Robbie? It's that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing. We wanted to give you and your audience the best gift we could, which is our Ultimate Nutrition and Recipe Guide. So it has a ton of recipes, but also a lot of scientific information, mm-hmm. a little bit further explaining some of the stuff we talked about today to help you take action, and just loaded with recipes that are all, they're low in fat, super high in their nutrient density, and absolutely super delicious. So I hope everybody enjoys it.
Thank you so much, Robbie. Really, really appreciate that. And I just want to say thank you to all of our listeners for being with us here today. And remember that health is wealth. And with every healthy choice, you are getting richer.